Today I'm going to be talking about something that went throughout my career, and that is working on minimizing the effect of institutions on patients, and it was part of a long movement where hospitalization, when I started 50 years ago, was 3 months. Now the average hospital in our area is, hospital stay is about 5 days. Okay. The interest in this thing started in the 1950s with the movie Snake Pit, which brought attention to people in the nation with what's happening to people in the state hospitals. At that time, the state hospitals had average stay of 3 years, and local hospitals about 5 months. And now the average stay in city hospitals, there are still a few state hospitals, the city hospitals, 5 days. So basically, in terms of local hospitals, we're looking at a huge change of that occurred initially due to the development of medication, but that's not what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about what happened after antipsychotic medications were introduced, and we're going to be looking at it in terms of that huge reduction occurring because of the way, because of cultural factors. And as you'll see as we go along, it's very much like the Stanford prison study. That is, people who are put in institutions act like and figure out quickly how you're supposed to act in the institution in order to get along and meet the goals of the institution. And now, you know, following the 50s, people began to study institutionalization to start to figure out just how you go about deinstitutionalizing the process of putting people in the hospital. The medications had really, 50 years ago, brought the hospital stay in cities down to 50, down to, let's say, about 3 months. Okay, one of the big things that caused this change was the development of the Community Mental Health Center via the Community Health Center Act of 1963, which was Kennedy had done. It funded community mental health centers in the city to provide comprehensive care for those who couldn't afford it. In 1966, Yale opened the second of these community mental health centers called the Connecticut Mental Health Center. And fortuitously, I had just finished my training there. And because of my interests in sociology, anthropology, and politics, in addition to psychology, I was able to get a position for training at Yale, because Yale was actually pretty much the only training center for psychiatrists that, in addition to psychoanalysis, they had a major interest in how sociologic factors are affecting people. At that time, Fritz Redlich was the chairman, and Redlich had published a book that became the sort of Bible of understanding what institutions and politics do to people. It was called Social Class and Mental Illness, and he was the head of the department, and when he interviewed me, he, you know, was real interested in my way of looking at changing people through changing institutions. After I finished my training, they had just opened the mental health center and they hired me into a faculty position there. Program I was assigned to was a research program, and the goal of the program was to treat people in the hospital for 3 days instead of the 30 days, which was had become the standard, the usual thing. People looked at this as a lunatic island idea. You cannot, treat these people in 3 days and let them go. So the program was headed by Caldwell Thomas, who's an African American psychiatrist from St. Kitts, and he came from his work in psychiatry developed in the military, where the idea was to quickly get the men back to the front lines, despite the fact that they are there because the sort of catch-22, you're in the psych hospital because of what happened to you on the battlefield. Now you're better. We want you to go back with what made and immerse yourself in what drove you crazy. So, so Claude's idea was that hospitals create a patient identity. You go into a hospital, or you go into any institution, prison, whatever, and there's a role that you are looking for right away. How am I supposed to behave while I'm here? Well, in a hospital, you're supposed to listen to the doctor, not question the doctor, learn to be a good patient, learn to follow the rules. In a medical hospital, that's extremely appropriate. In a psychiatric hospital, it's totally contrary to the goal of the patient healing. You don't want a patient who's docile, following all the rules, and doesn't have isn't initiating things. The patients, once they leave the hospital, they have to be independent. So at that time, Claude got hold of a famous sociologist, Kai Erickson, happens to be Eric Erickson's son, and they went over every detail of what happens to a patient when they enter the hospital. Is there a registration desk? You don't need it, really. You don't need a uniform. You don't have to always seek permission to do everything. They went down the list of everything that happens with a patient when they enter the hospital, and they eliminated almost all of them completely in the program. So if the program was called the Emergency Treatment Unit, was located in about a block-long building that was a community mental health center. But it was right off the lobby there. And they arranged the inside to be as homey as possible. So there was... you go in and there's Davenports and TVs. There's no nursing station. You're told just to bring some casual clothes for 2 or 3 days. And as they enter, the person who introduces them to the program, it tells them, today we're going to start with your discharge planning. and they run. And that's really important because it starts to set your mind going that I'm just going to be here for 30 days. These people think, you know, they're not going to believe this right offhand. But about day two and three, and certainly day three, they're seeing people who do not seem very crazy, leaving the hospital, saying a farewell to the patients, talking about how much they change, etc., etc. So they pick this directly up from the other people in the hospital, and they accommodate. It's the social expectation there that this is what's going to happen. And when people come in with a psychotic break or severe suicidal depression, they're overwhelmed. They don't know where to go from there, so they're looking for clues. So we provide them with the clues. And the clues all have to do, you'll be pulling yourself together really fast and leaving the hospital in 3 days. It was shocking to the staff as we started doing this to watch this actually work. And you know, since this was an academic program, there was a follow-up at 6 months and 1 year, and sure enough, they did as well or better than the patients who went to the 30-day unit. The problem with this whole thing is that when I published the results, there wasn't much interest in it because it seemed so totally disconnected with how people learn psychiatry, with what patients expected, with their view of hospitalization. That is, it just seemed like a peculiar publication. After I had worked a couple of years at Yale, I decided to come out to San Francisco. And when I moved to San Francisco, again, I took a job with a community mental health center. They had divided San Francisco into 5 different catchment areas. I worked in the Mission, I was the supervising psychiatrist in the Mission Mental Health Center. Now, learning about the Mission was and getting into it and involved with it was a tremendous experience. I really enjoyed the people and the culture. And for a while, I lived in the Mission or nearby on Potrero Hill in Noe Valley, and just getting to know the culture was a treat. Let's see. Okay. So in my job at the mental health center, I was in charge of the ward that treated the people at Mission Mental Health Center, as well as outpatient and emergency services. And in one of the hospitals I was working with in the Mission, I ran into, I made a friend with a fellow, Ray Rivera, who was a psych tech. And Ray was very community-oriented, and he was a community organizer in the style of the Mission, which is a style that at that time involved confrontation. And it wasn't Gandhi-esque. It was in your face. He brought up the notion, the idea, or the concern that the Latino patients in the hospital really weren't getting very good treatment. People didn't know the language, and although two-thirds of them spoke English, the third that spoke Spanish just wandered around till they were discharged. There were rare interpreters. They didn't come out much improved. So we decided, well, let's come up with a model that really provides the service to people in a way they can understand and be careful, be comfortable with. So under the influence of some of the drugs they used at that time, maybe a little marijuana, maybe a little tequila, we came up with a plan for a residential treatment program in a house in the Mission that would be staffed primarily by Latinos and would use crisis intervention techniques where you focus on the acute symptoms and you get them started on the usual antipsychotic medications. Ray and his gang of usual guys wound up confronting the powers that be in San Francisco, even getting the head of Mission Mental Health fired. After 2 years, they would do anything to get rid of us. I don't recommend this method, but at different times in different cultures, there's ways of getting things done. And Ray and his mission buddies had developed a manner that was a little scary, but not violent. It's intimidating, though, definitely. Anyhow, finally, they gave up and hired someone else to be the overall director of Mission Mental Health Center, who was a Latina. And soon we were actually negotiating verbally instead of screaming at each other. And they realized that, well, maybe this idea of putting patients in a house rather than a hospital made sense. Why do psychiatric patients need a hospital? There are a few who do because they might have severe concomitant illness, but why are you going to spend now $2,000 a day to stay in a hospital when you can be in a house and get the exact same services? Because they don't use the hospital services. If they need to visit the hospital, we would take them on our van to the hospital for an appointment. It really was an irrational decision to use hospitals for treating psychiatric patients. There were always 10 to 20% who may need seclusion or who may be actively suicidal and may need a locked unit. But the remainder of them didn't need that. And even those who were you needed a hospital for in the beginning, after they were on the medications, they calmed down. And when you gave them the option of going to this really nice Victorian house in the Mission versus staying in the hospital, they were up for a quick discharge. So the program either would directly take patients who were headed to the hospital or take them after they calmed down. So it was in a really beautiful Victorian house. It was furnished like a house in Mexico. You go in and there's a cross on the wall and a little altar here, and Latino artists painted a few pictures and that we hung up, and it was very comfortable, and people would walk in and they immediately felt at home. Versus going into an institution where you automatically sort of shut up and try not get into trouble if you were capable of doing that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So it was furnished like a Mexican house, and we had as a cook a Salvadoranian man who was a pretty good cook. But actually, who did the cooking was he worked with the patients to do the cooking. When they came in, they were the first day they were asked to help clean up the tables for someone else. They were soon assigned to some cooking duties. Everyone did their own cleaning. It was totally how you would behave at a home. This is what the milieu was teaching them rather than how to be a good patient. And the patients loved it. The staff loved it. It was really a wonderful experience. And the stay was 2 weeks. I really wanted to do it in 4 or 5 days, but they weren't willing to fund something like that because it was such a far-out idea. No longer crazy, but really no one knew whether it was going to work, including us. Let's see. Okay, as I mentioned, most of the staff spoke Spanish, the treatment was geared to the issues that presented differently in a Spanish culture, a Latino culture. Discharge planning started on day one, and went through the 2 weeks that we were forced to do the program for 2 weeks. So we did that, and patients went through the usual changes of they would relate to the staff in a personal way, their opinion about things and how they should be run was left mostly up to the patients. We would guide them in things, but it was clearly their program and designed for them, and they opened up and talked about issues on the first day, in contrast to being very leery about talking about what's really going on inside of me for a couple of days in a regular hospital. So things moved really fast and really comfortably. About 80% of the people within 2 weeks were ready for a discharge. The others really needed more work and would go to the hospital. I think we reduced it below 20% eventually. Each of them... each of them, as they went on, would develop a discharge plan, as I said, starting from day one. And so it would be a very individualized plan. It would it may include going to an intensive partial hospital program where you just spend days there, to an outpatient clinic, to some of them just didn't want to have anything to do with psychiatry until they had the next breakdown. So, we did not cure any of these patients. We got them to assume an identity that was really more functional, because they were helping with breakfast, they were dressed in their normal everyday clothes, they were living in a nice house in the intermission about 2 blocks from the corner of Mission and 24th. So we were right in the heart of the Mission. I felt one of the core things that was happening is that by living in a normal environment, they weren't assuming a patient identity. They were never treated as patients. They did get medication, but no one was forced to take medication. It was recommended that they take it, and if they wanted to stop it, they could stop it. But usually we had such a positive relationship that they were quite willing to follow any suggestions that we had. Some of them would fail, but 80% of them went through it and were out of the program in two weeks. Now, basically what patients would look like or what would happen to them afterwards, so these are patients with acute psychosis or severe depressions or suicidal, and they would continue to have intermittently to have breakdowns. So, we might see them coming back in a number of months or a number of years, but it was more effective than the hospital. It was a very humanistic approach, and it was much less expensive than putting these people in the hospital when they started the program. Any questions, Barbara?
Can you give an idea of what a discharge plan would look like, different aspects of it?
Okay, my plant in the audience has a question. the discharge planning was that they might go to a day treatment program if they were still really in the throes of struggling with their psychosis, where they would just come in during the day. And these programs, day programs, they tended to last a couple months. All of them were referred to outpatients, so that they were then treated as outpatients. And maybe readmitted to the program, because we in no way cured them. We just got them through the acute program at a fraction of the cost of a hospitalization. And we weren't able to take everyone. We couldn't take violent patients. Patients who were hospitalized were often, after discharge, sent to our program. And were able to live at home and lead a fairly normal life. But everyone preferred coming to this program than going to the hospital. And if they looked appropriate when they had initially come to the ER, they felt they weren't going to be violent or make a suicide attempt, they were sent to the La Posada program. This was in the Mission District in San Francisco. And this model became a national model, and all major cities have it. And so it's basically labeled as an alternative to hospitalization. Any questions? Yeah.
Wait for the mic.
When you discharge someone who had been homeless or who was actively homeless before they were admitted, how did that work? Did you have a halfway residence or some kind of thing that people could go to maintain?
Yeah. Okay. This program, the specific aspect of the program was residential, and part of the discharge plan would be getting them housing and setting them up with outpatient. And the usual stay in these programs were about 2 weeks. And at that time, then they go to outpatient programs. Okay.
I had an experience as a college student. I was a psychology student at the time. I had finished Psych 101, and as part of abnormal psych, you were doing volunteer work at Camarillo State Mental Hospital. And I did a case study on a boy named Paul who seemed to be there according to the intake documents because he wet his bed a lot. And he had been there since the age of 7, and he was 16 when I met him. He was in the chronic boys ward. And I was thinking as you were talking, he would never have had a chance to be eligible for your program because he was already in the system. He was doing the Thorazine shuffle. He was in a chronic boys ward where there would be waves. Everybody was on too much Thorazine, in my opinion. And, of course, I was an expert at the time. Everybody's on one patient would start banging his head, and there would be a wave through the ward. Another person would start biting his forearm. There'd be a wave of that through. It was so obvious to me that it was custodial medicine, and he was going to be there the rest of his life. Possibly, from my opinion, because his parents couldn't handle his bedwetting. So I was just wondering, were there any success stories where chronic patients who were already institutionalized got the advantage of maybe getting off Thorazine and seeing whether they were appropriate for an outpatient or halfway house situation?
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't been rehospitalized after going to the program. No, seriously. Basically, what was the question?
Whether an institutionalized patient has ever found the opportunity to be in the halfway house.
Yeah, the stay in the halfway houses was only pretty time limited, and now halfway houses, you know, you go in and it's a matter of a couple weeks or a couple months.
And it was always new patients rather than.
No, a lot of these are chronic patients mostly that we're talking about. Occasionally we get, you know, a first psychotic episode. But they were either, you know, depressive psychotic or schizophrenic psychotic. And most of them had been in the system for years. And some of them, you know, would be referred to a long-term hospitalization. But very, very few. Most of them, almost all of them, would go home after a two-week stay there. My shill here, Barbara.
Thank you. I want to talk about Baker Places, where I worked when I met him, in a minute. But the other thing that's really good about what you're talking about. Can't remember the name of the program.
Excuse me, Baker Place is a residential program.
But people who were treated in their community didn't lose touch with their families, their friends, the stores they went to, the streets they walked down, jobs they'd had, where they'd gone to school. That's another real plus. Whereas the institutionalized people were taken away from everything. And when I met Gil, I worked at Baker Places, which was had a series of halfway houses, and people...
She was not a patient.
No, no, sorry, no. Nor he of mine, of ours. these were people who'd been in state hospitals often for many years. They were young. Some of them were, I think we started at 18 and went up to 40. So we taught them how to cook, how to make their beds, how to clean up, how to get along with other people in a different kind of setting. So in that, I don't know what was available for children. At that time, I mean, I was really hooked into this. But they'd all been removed from their families, from their communities. They came to San Francisco. Most of them hadn't grown up in San Francisco, so it was a matter of starting all over again. It's tough.
This type of a program involves a stay in the hospital of about usually about 2 weeks, and but then you know people would have relapses and so on. So this wasn't a way of curing people; it's a way of curing them from relying on state hospitals and long-term stays of 2, 3, 4 years. This was a two-week stay in a outpatient program. And the patients really enjoyed it. They were right in the Mission District of San Francisco, and a large percent of them were Latinos. And just in general, they really liked the program. They did not have to go to the hospital. You know, these are people who get psychotic and are used to then being hospitalized, but now they could go to this really nice house in the Mission and receive outpatient treatment instead of having to go to the hospital. Now, we couldn't take all patients. We couldn't take people who were acutely suicidal. We couldn't take people who were so schizophrenic that they couldn't follow orders. We did take people who primarily who were either severely schizophrenic or had what's called major depressions. One major depression is one where you really can't function at all. And within a two-week period, they would be discharged from the program and back into an outpatient outpatient mode of treatment.
Gil, what was the time period that you were working in the Mission?
Let's see, this was started, I think, in 63. Did you mean the date or the length of stay?
No, the years, 63 to what?
Oh, it's still going.
Oh, but you're not working there anymore.
No. No, now there are these programs all across the nation. So this was the first one to treat patients in a to treat them in a residential setting short term. There were long term where you could go in for a couple of years to a residential program, but this program people would only stay in the program, stay in the hospital for about for a 2 week period, and
over here, Gil, over here. Hi, Helen. I was going to ask if it's still going, and is it still in the same location, still operating in the same way? And what is it called again? La Posada?
La Posada. It's in San Francisco on 23rd and Cap, right in the heart of the Mission. The heart of the Mission is probably 24th and Mission Street.
It sounds like a brilliant idea. That's really a wonderful thing to have spread.
It evolved out of the halfway house movement. It's very much like a halfway house, except it's time limited and it takes acutely ill patients who normally would be in the hospital. So it's labeled a hospital alternative. And it's a nationwide, it's available in all the major cities, usually county funded.
And that's what it's called around the
country, possible. La Posada is in San Francisco, and there's, blanking on the name of the one here. Anyhow, through, La Posada.
There's also something new,
that
the partial day.
Yeah, a lot of them do a step down. They start in the brief hospital model that we have, where they go home at night, then they switch to day treatment programs, where they come in. This was essentially a 2 week day treatment. They would come into the program and they'd live there for 2 weeks, and then they'd switch to a day treatment program but continue with us. So in the day treatment program, people come 5 days a week for about 5 hours a day, and they get about 5 hours of therapy and usually stay about a month or two or three. So that was often a step down from when people were discharged from La Posada. They go to a day treatment program if they weren't ready for outpatient. Some would be well enough for outpatient, but yes.
I work in San Francisco instead of Washington. Oh, you need it.
I work in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and whenever I leave the office, I walk around anywhere, there are massive amounts of primarily homeless people with severe mental disabilities, to the point where they will not, I don't believe, they would voluntarily go into a program like this. So there was a time where it was, hey, just lock them up in the state hospital, and obviously that's wrong to do because it's violating their rights. So how do we balance their needs and society's need to be able to walk down the sidewalk without tripping on somebody with a needle in their arm or being hit or something happening? How do we balance helping them when they don't necessarily want help or are incapable of processing that and their rights?
There's also types of programs where they work on an outpatient basis with these people because they're unwilling to come into the program. Usually, if these people who live on the street will decompensate, though, and their underlying psychotic symptoms get floored, they get 5150, that is, involuntarily put into a hospital. But they can also be put into an acute residential treatment, such as what I'm talking about. and that stay is the acute residential treatment is about 2 weeks usually.
Hi, I wanted to know what was a day like for a patient in the residential? I mean, how do you give somebody 5 hours of therapy or whatever without it being obvious? And so that's one question. What was it like? And two, how many people could you have at a time?
The residential programs usually have around 20 people, give or take five. And what they did during the day is there would be a morning check-in for the group. Each of the residents, the other ones say patients, they're called residents, which is part of the treatment. Each of them is assigned a specific therapist who would be a non-professional community person, usually. They would meet once a day with their therapist. And there'd be about 4 different hours of actual treatment, the one-to-one. And then the rest were groups. Some were group activities like art therapy. Others were like classic group therapy. Others were discharge planning. Discharge planning would start on day one. And and discharge planning would involve figuring out what level of treatment you're going to need when you get out of here. Usually it's just outpatient treatment, but some need bulk rehab. Some need a long-term residential program, and so on. So treatment planning was a big part of the program, and by the time they left, they had to have an ongoing plan. Some would stay in halfway houses or residential treatment programs long term. Okay.
I was wondering, it seems to me that Governor Reagan happened around 68. Around to Camarillo, that made a big difference as far as homeless issues and people living on the street who had been deinstitutionalized. Did you find a big change around 1968 because of Reagan?
I think Reagan's program was an inspiration to have a program that really helped the patients, and that's where Kennedy came in and with providing mental health, or any city, any big city could apply for a mental health center grant, and that was the 1963 Act. And they would be funded completely to run one of these programs that usually had 15 or 20 patients in for a couple months, let's say 3 months, and in a house. So that was. That was available to everyone living in a big city. And the beauty of it, one of the reasons for its success is it's so much cheaper than putting patients in a hospital. Yeah. Right. Okay.
My question, Gil, is going back to the late 60s, 70s. In Illinois, they had, where I was living at the time, they had this big movement to deinstitutionalize
right.
people from the big hospitals.
Yes, this was part of that.
Yeah. And so what happened in California was happening all over the country. And it was seen to be a progressive movement at that time. Didn't turn out that way, but not to discount all the efforts you made, but I just wonder in terms of your past, something I don't know yet, your career goes back further than that, and whether you were still involved in the hospital-based I can't think of the right word. Incarceration came to my mind. And that's not the correct word. But, you know, that period of time of that transition, were you also involved prior to that time?
Prior to that time, I was working at a psychiatric unit in San Francisco General. And it was only, this was the first crisis residential program. No one had thought of a model like this before. There were halfway houses, which were very effective, but they would follow hospitalization. People who weren't ready just to be on their own might go to a halfway house. This was a program, an alternative to hospitalization. And we could take a huge percent. We could even take a good number of the actively suicide people if they could give us a promise that we could believe that we would essentially say, you can live in this. I was working in the ER. I'd say, you could have a room in this nice residential program. The mission emergency room was in the basement of the psychiatric program. The residential program. Or you could go to the hospital. So usually they weren't crazy enough to choose the hospital over living in this Victorian house. They would do that. Bob?
Could I ask a follow-up?
Yeah.
Wait for the mic.
It sounds like your involvement in the 60s was already in doing innovative short-term deinstitutionalizing approaches to mental health care. However, there were still during that time all the big state hospitals.
Gradually, the state hospitals were closed down to a large degree.
Right. And my question.
Also, the city hospitals it had a big impact on them, at least in the major cities where they had crisis residential programs that lasted 2 weeks. It was the standard.
Well, what I was getting at was, as a kid, we were always threatened by our peers and others that if you weren't good, you would be sent to, in the case of Chicago, to Mantino State Hospital. In the case of California, it was to Vacaville. Right.
It could have helped you.
And those images of the big state warehousey type mental hospitals, I mean, this is from the outside, very, very layman's view of them. Did you have experiences in those institutions, or were you always just in the alternative short-term care?
Well, in my training, I worked in a VA hospital in New Haven, and also somewhat in a state hospital. Little of my time was in that. But this concept of short-term crisis intervention was a brand new concept that Ray and I came up with, and is currently a national model. the idea is, a basic idea behind it is, the longer you keep a patient in a hospital, the more institutionalized they get, and they're really, and getting them out of the state hospital is a problem because of institutionalization, and that's why it was tending, when we started, to last 20 years. Of course, the first big thing that cut into that 20 years was the development of the antipsychotic medicines, but even that, they whittled it down to 3 years in the state hospitals. And by using there have been several other models that have developed to deal in a non-hospital way with psychotic patients. There's halfway houses that are very effective in working with severely disturbed patients, and those, some the one I helped start in San Francisco, La Amistad, we would often shift people from La Posada, which was the short-term residential program, to La Amistad, which is a longer-term one, or to outpatient. This was part of the treatment planning, but as I said, it goes through from day one. That whole idea of using treatment planning as a treatment modality is very interesting, because you would be engaging the patient in planning their future, and they would spend the 3 days, one of the hours in each day, planning out what are the services they need when they leave. And then on day three, we would usually implement that. For instance, if they wanted to go to a halfway house, we'd have them go to the halfway house to get interviewed on day three. Or if they wanted outpatient, we'd start them with an outpatient therapist, or at least have an interview. But they would have a plan in place on day three to carry on the treatment. So this is not a cure for a mental illness. If I cured anyone, it was a mistake. You lose jobs that way.
Gil, when I happened to be living in New Jersey in the 80s and 90s, and those of us working in social services were very aware of the people who had been deinstitutionalized as they cut down the state hospitals. Many people, particularly men, were sent to a town down on the Jersey Shore that was low income, and there were plenty of rooming houses. Then where I was living, we were close to one of the state hospitals, and some people just ended up in our community. But the overriding problem that we had for all of them was a lack of services, that they were doing the deinstitutionalization, but they were not setting up support systems for people who were then in need of some kind of support once they were out. Would you say a little bit about the adequacy of funding for mental health services?
The adequacy of what?
Funding.
Oh, yeah. So funding was variable. Yeah. The state had to set up these mental health systems, but they weren't forced to. The money was available, but a number of states didn't do it or did it in a very inadequate way. But the Mental Health Act not only provided for alternatives to hospitalization, but it provided for outpatient services and vocational rehab, etc. So the more progressive states quickly applied for these grants, But many states were resistant or really only provided inadequate services.
Is funding adequate now?
It's pretty good at this time. A big part of what's available are other alternatives to hospitalization. There's what's called the IOP, intensive outpatient, and usually hospitals run these, and they're usually come in 2 days a week for a couple hours. There's partial hospitalization, which is the same thing, but it's 5 days a week. And the newest trend for the last 10 years is the community outreach program. I got the name somewhat wrong. Out of Chicago, came from the University of Chicago, where they have mobile teams that go out to the home and treat the people in their home. Because they were finding a lot of the people would get out of the hospital or out of the residential treatment program and would not follow through. They wouldn't get any treatment. They'd be back in 6 months as soon as the effect of the medication wore off. So my last job, which just ended less than a year ago, was working with program through the Hume Center, which was a mental health center, and this program went into the houses to treated untreatable patients. Untreatable meant I don't want treatment, I'm not going to take my pills, and I'm not going to come in for an appointment. So we had a whole program that was a mobile strike team, and would go into the home and work with people, and they really like that, because when you go into the homes to work with patients, they're much more cooperative than they are if you're treating them in a clinic, because it's their home. And so mobile crisis teams are sort of the newest way of addressing the problem of those patients who won't come into the hospital until they're, you know, picked up on the street hallucinating or had made a severe suicide attempt. And that's a really effective way. It's the only way of engaging those patients. You go out to them and treat them where they live. And I'm really impressed by the effectiveness of those programs. The patients are quite engageable if you go to them. And it saves, it's popular because it saves a ton of money. These people who won't come in for treatment wind up going to the emergency room, which is the most expensive way of getting treatment. And, you know, they may be running out bills of $500,000 a year in emergency room services. So now that's the latest way they have of reducing hospitalization.
I have a follow-up question, Gail, right here.
Oh, there you are.
Having to do with the adequacy and availability of this model of care in our neighboring, in our home communities.
Yeah.
Here in the East Bay, in Richmond, El Cerrito, Berkeley, Oakland.
Yeah.
How are we doing?
First of all, San Francisco was divided into 5 catchment areas, and they have 5 mental health centers. So here in Contra Costa County, there's a number of clinics. I'm not sure how many. There's none in Richmond, but there are. Okay. I always get harassed by her. And I can't 5150 her. They won't let me.
I think we're running out of time. Just a couple more questions.
The model of going into people's homes and treating them there seems to me to be really a great idea. But it makes me consider the homeless and how important having a home is to any success. I mean, you can have success with some people in the treatment centers. You can have some success with people in their homes. But to not have a home seems to me to preclude success at any treatment. To go out into the street and say, okay, I'm going to get you your medication, won't do the trick.
Now, usually the team will see people in the street, and we'll try and get them to go into a homeless shelter, and then they'll see them in the homeless shelter.
And, I said a homeless shelter isn't a home.
It's better than the streets by far.
Okay, let's give our speaker a big hand.